Blog Talk Radio.
This is Chief for Yourself. Now, here's Gio.
Hi, and welcome to Chief for Yourself. Great to have you here with us, no matter where in the world you are at this moment. Our guest today is an artist, teacher, author, and in the real sense of the word, a witch. Danielle Dulski makes her second visit to the program. On her last visit, you may remember, we talked about her book, Woman Most Wild, Three Keys to Liberating the Witch Within, which debunks old assumptions about witches being bad or evil, and also reveals the true nature of witchcraft. This time, Danielle is going to tell us about her book, The Holy Wild, A Heathen Bible for the Untamed Woman. And I'm happy to have her back with us. Danielle, could we call this book a sequel or a follow-up to Woman Most Wild, or does that not apply?
Well, yeah, I think that's fair. They're both about witchcraft. I like to think of Woman Most Wild, the first book, as kind of an overview, and then this one digs a lot deeper into some different areas of witchcraft.
It's an interesting title, both The Holy Wild and A Heathen Bible. So if you would break both of those phrases up, what we mean by Holy Wild and Heathen Bible?
Yeah, so those are good words, right?
Yes, very interesting, yeah.
Heathen, I'll start with heathen. So heathen is, one of those words that kind of evokes this visceral response in a lot of people, much like witch does. But heathen, it comes from the Germanic word, which means dweller on the heath or inhabiting uncultivated land. So, being able to pursue a spirituality that has not been overbuilt is the way I talk about it in the book. So that's why heathen. And also it was this great word that I got called a lot when I was younger and had to go to church. I was always called a heathen, not only by my mother, but that's kind of the person who sticks in my head is calling me a heathen. And not always in a hurtful way, but kind of in like a playful way, in a way that alerted me to the fact that I didn't really fit in born again Christianity anyway.
Yeah.
And then The Holy Wild. So in both Woman Most Wild and in this book, there's this notion, this theme of, the wildness or the wilds or nature as being holy or divine. So I say The Holy Wild because the underlying, my hope anyway, is that the reader really comes to know their bodies, their emotions, their kinship with nature as just as divine as, as any deity might be. So that's why The Holy Wild, and that's why heathen. And then Untamed Woman, I think that, lots of women really want to claim this their untamed nature. So being unbound and not beholden to any spiritual contracts that might not have been their own, any indoctrinated beliefs that they might find particularly binding. So untamed, wanting to kind of cut themselves free of those tethers.
And to go back to what you mentioned about your upbringing and religion, I think we covered this in the first interview, but if you can give us a refresher, how did you get pointed in the direction you're in now? Well, coming from a pretty conservative environment, how do you make that sharp turn?
That's not a short answer, but it was being raised born again Christian, evangelical Christian, and always having these moments, these experiences where I just felt like something wasn't quite right. And a lot of those moments had to do with not being able to ask questions, or any question that I would ask would be kind of looked at as a sin in itself, just having asked the question. And that never sat well with me. So there was that kind of feeling that this spirituality isn't serving me in every way that I want it to. And then there was the hiding, you know, tarot cards or books on witchcraft under my bed. The Spiral Dance by Starhawk, you know, was probably the first book I ever hid under my bed. It's still one of my great Bibles of witchcraft. And then later in the teenage years, it was coming to practice yoga in this kind of rebellious way where my mother told me I couldn't do it because it was of the devil. So, of course, I really wanted to do it. And so I started practicing yoga, you know, as a form of rebelling against my religion, which seems really funny to me now. But at the time, it was, you know, the teacher talking about the body as being holy and the divine in me honors the divine in you at the end of every class. And I just thought, oh, that's different. That's something that I haven't heard before. Maybe that's something I've been looking for and been unable to find in church. And so then, you know, during the late teenage years, I went to Ireland and I lived there for 6 months. And there's kind of this beautiful weaving of paganism with religion in a way that kind of felt very ancestral to me because I have a large portion of my DNA is from Ireland. So it kind of felt like I was being held and that I wasn't being sinful necessarily. And so then it was this kind of tearing away from childhood religion that I think happens to a lot of people during their early 20s. Not really full-on embracing witchcraft until my mid-20s, but I'm 38 now, so I've been very into it for a long time. I'm not considering turning away from it.
Well, despite all of the things that are written and said about witchcraft in general, I think you're providing a service as well. What does it mean to you to be a witch?
Yeah, So that means different things to different people. For me, a witch is anybody that meets both of two conditions. So they have claimed the name witch for themselves, and then they have also they also practice witchcraft. So there's lots of people that practice witchcraft, which is basically an art, more so than a religion for a lot of people. And then there's people that do that, but then also call themselves witches. So to me, you know, you're a witch if you say you're a witch and you practice witchcraft. But you can practice witchcraft without necessarily being a witch if you don't want to be. Mm-hmm. And I know that that's confusing.
Well, you mentioned briefly the deity, too. And I guess from what I'm gathering in the book and from what you've said, a connection with the divine is optional, or at least some form of what's commonly called God. Is that optional in this practice?
Yeah, so I don't think that a connection with the divine is optional. A connection with deity, that is optional. So there's kind of this separation between earthen divinity or embodied mm-hmm. divinity, and then divinity that is embodied in a figure that we might look at as external to us. So I think that most witches would say that a connection to the divine is absolutely essential, but that you don't necessarily need to work with deity. And I think that that's something that scares a lot of newer witches away from the craft, is this feeling like they have to, you know, worship the old gods and build these altars to these horned nature deities, and that it isn't that way. I mean, it certainly is for some people, but you know, if you end up working with deity, it's kind of like feeling that deity has chosen you rather than you're kind of sifting through, you know, the deities that you really like and kind of using them as tools. Like, all of that gets kind of very messed up and it doesn't end up serving anybody. Mm. But but having this felt and kind of embodied sense of divinity, that's important.
Well, this book, The Holy Wild, is built around five sections or elements. Can you take us through those five and how they are used?
Sure. Yeah. So the whole book, The Holy Wild, is broken into five different books, one for each element. So there's the Book of Earth, the Book of Water, the Book of Fire, the Book of Air, and the Book of Ether. And then within each of those five books, there's three different chapters: the verses, rituals, and magic. So the earth element is kind of like our ground or our home. So within the Book of Earth, there's a lot of poetry and then also spells and opportunities for ritual and kind of guided meditations that work with the body and ground and this idea of roots and tree magic is in there. And then the Book of Water is very much about emotions. So there's a lot of talk of sensuality and art and different rituals for working with creativity as a resource. And then the Book of Fire is framed in terms of activism. So, you know, and also a little bit of using fire for divination purposes, which is called pyromancy. So, you know, gazing at a flame or whatever in order as an oracle. And then the Book of Air is very much about relationships. So there's this huge shift between the Book of Fire and the Book of Air, because the Book of Fire is very kind of purposed and kind of angry, but necessarily so. And then the Book of Air is very much about building communal relationships and global change and women's circles and partnership. And then finally, the Book of Ether is very much about working with the spirit world and the third eye and crown chakra, so the upper chakras, psychic development, a little bit of mediumship, and really the season that we're in right now, which I call crone season or the season of the witch, where the veil becomes very thin, all of that is very much ether. So it's kind of this otherworldly element that is a little bit mysterious, but also really where the most potent magic lives. So that's how the book is organized. And then within all of that, there's this revisioning of all of these different feminine archetypes and opportunities for the reader to tell her own story and to kind of present that story in a way that's magical and not necessarily mundane, because I think a lot of women see their own stories as being unimportant when really they are holy and everything. So that's a key message in the book, is knowing your own story as holy and then using that to inform your witchcraft.
Our guest on this Chief and Yourself is Danielle Belsky, author of The Holy Wild, A Heathen Bible for the Untamed Woman. There's certainly an allure tied to witchcraft. So if you would, talk a bit about the sexuality of the wild woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the key with that is for it to be very autonomous. So in the Book of Water, I talk a lot about this untethered sexuality or this wild sexuality, which really just means that it's whatever you as the practitioner want it to be, and it's not conforming to anybody else's ideal of, how radical or rebellious or wild you should be. It's not about that. It's just not, it's just digging through whatever beliefs you might have about your own body, your own sexuality, and making sure that they're really yours and not somebody else's. And I think that, that's kind of the journey that everyone undergoes, regardless of gender, through the late teenage years and then during their 20s, just trying to make sure that their sexuality and their spirituality is really theirs and, isn't still molded to somebody else's notions of what is pure or correct.
I'm thinking back to, and you mentioned a little while ago the word pagan, and I'm thinking back to my own childhood. This is like the worst thing a person on earth could be was a pagan. It was sinful,
it was heathen,
it was so horrible, and you felt sorry for them, you took up collections for them, but where does the word pagan now fit into this discussion?
So pagan, from my understanding, is, you know, anyone that wasn't Christian. So, you know, my childhood and yours sound similar.
Yeah.
So me too. I was always told that, you know, pagan and heathen was bad, and I guess pagan was kind of presented as worse than heathen. I don't know that my mother ever called me a pagan, but not every, I think every witch would call themselves a pagan, but not every pagan would call themselves a witch. So in the pagan community, there is this sense of freedom and reclaiming that word certainly is not sinful, but also being kind of an umbrella term for all of these different spiritual paths and religions. So, you know, I was raised considering pagans just being anybody who wasn't Christian,
yeah.
But the pagan community has kind of, you know, it's, I don't know if it's taken it back or reclaimed it, because I believe that the roots of pagan are similar to heathen, and it just means, you know, of the country, you know, living in a rural place and not subscribing to whatever the religion of the government was.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So inhabiting open country. But yeah, so pagan means different things to different people, but there's certainly a desire to reclaim that, just like the word witch.
Mm-hmm. So what would you say to someone who is fascinated by what we're talking about today, wants to learn more, wants to delve into it more, but still wants to hold on to that old-timey religion? Is there a way to make the two get along?
Yeah, I think that there absolutely is, and, you know, witchcraft is very versatile, so it's not, it wouldn't be witchcraft's fault if you weren't able to marry the two religions or the two spiritual paths. I think that the key is that if you follow what you're calling an old-timey religion, is there room in there for, you know, enough open-mindedness that that the practitioner can be fully autonomous and empowered, because it's difficult to practice witchcraft, to practice magic, without feeling like you are complete, that you aren't full of agency and power, that you have the right to do this, that you have the right to affect change in your world. And I think that that's where the discrepancy can happen between what you called an old-timey religion, so those kind of religions, and witchcraft. There's a difference in the level of autonomy of the practitioner, usually, and certainly in my experience there was. So if it's a religious path that says the practitioner can be completely full of power and empowered to affect change in the world, then there's no reason why you couldn't practice witchcraft and, you know, be a Christian or follow some other of the major religious paths. But that's the key. You know, if it's a religion that says that you are, that divinity is completely external to you and that you're kind of subservient to this higher power, it's difficult to really claim that that fire that you need to practice magic in a way that works and is meaningful for you.
And speaking of magic, you have a little different way of spelling the word magic. Talk about that and why you do it.
Yeah, a lot of pagans do that. That's not mine. I'm pretty sure that was Gerald Gardner that formalized that. And it was just a way to distinguish between, you know, the magic that we do, the magic of witchcraft, and then the magic that a magician would do that would be more like a trick or, you know, sleight of hand. So adding the K is just a way of saying, you know, this is the real magic.
Hollywood and the press is kind of running with witchcraft these days. In fact, today, I was reading a story about Beyonce, who's apparently put a spell on a band member. Is this helping? Yeah, is this helping or hurting? What say you?
Yeah, well, I'm sure that Beyonce had a good reason. I don't know anything about that, but I'm sure that she had a good reason. I think that in a lot of ways, it helps. You know, if it's a way, if it's media coverage or people talking about it in a way that is true and not exploitative, then certainly that helps and makes witchcraft more visible and hopefully makes people less afraid. If it's you know, there's certain films that have come out in the past couple of years that I feel weren't particularly helpful in terms of, and I won't name any of them, but I feel like, you know, they weren't particularly helpful in dismantling these indoctrinated beliefs that a lot of people have around witchcraft, like that a witch is, you know, the evil woman that lives in the woods and eats children or whatever. So I do think that the, you know, the potential for witchcraft to be more visible, for that to be a great aid, I think that that's wonderful. And I do personally have like some resistance sometimes to the idea of it being like, you know, the mystery schools or something like that, like keeping it in the shadows, that maybe that shouldn't be what we're working for anymore. Maybe it's to drag all of this out of the shadows and just show it to the world, because when you do that, you see that it's nowhere near as scary as it is when it's kept in secret. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think that it can work both ways, to answer your question.
Yeah, it's hard to shoot down that Wizard of Oz image. There's people today, adults I know, who are still kind of shaky when they think the witch and the wizard of, oh my God, you know, it's like, oh, you know. So yeah, it's kind of hard to change that, I guess. If our reader is altruistic and maybe wants to bring what they're learning to the world, besides their own personal gain, how can they do this using the concepts in the book? Can they take this out to the world in general?
Yeah, I mean, that's it. I think it's absolutely essential. I think that, you know, the typical path of the witch is when you start practicing, you're kind of doing it for you. You're probably doing it in a solitary way. You're you know, a living room witch or a kitchen witch, and you're just kind of in, you know, in your own home and probably a little bit scared to, you know, tell people what you're doing, and the magic that you're practicing is very much for you. It's about, you know, maybe healing a family member or invoking personal abundance or something like that. But then there does come a point where it almost seems like that's not good enough anymore, and it might not be that it's not working, it's just that there's kind of this hunger for wanting to affect change in the world that's bigger than you, you know, not just your world. So from in my practice, I tend to look at it like there's these layers, right? So if I'm sending out these ripples of change, if I'm wanting to evoke abundance, for example, for me, then I'm also wanting to do that for my local community. I'm also wanting to do that for the country or for the global community, and then, you know, for the cosmos. So I'm trying to get bigger and make these connections in my magic between me as the center point, in the case of a spell, the witch's center point, not that I'm the center point of the universe, in the case of a spell, the witch is the center point, and then these different layers of community. So being able to make connections between between all of these different layers is absolutely everything, and it strengthens your magic. So magic is activism. Magic is a way of magic is your conversation with the world about the kind of world you want the children of the future to live in. So every time you cast a spell, you're saying, you know, this is what I want, not just for me, but for future generations. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of, you know, where I am anyway in my practice now, and it has, I do see it with other women, that there's this kind of steady evolution from, I'm just going to work my magic for me, and then it gets bigger, and they don't not work for themselves anymore, it's just that they're connecting it to something beyond themselves. powerful and you know, serves the collective.
I'll ask you for some final thoughts. In particular, is there a takeaway from the book that you want to leave with readers?
A takeaway from the book. I think that, well, I hope that the biggest takeaway is that your witchcraft is whatever you make of it. So nobody, including me, can tell you exactly how to do it. And that if your spiritual practice, even if you're not ready to call it witchcraft, starts to feel very encumbered by all of these different, you know, rituals that you're reading about and these deities that you're reading about and all of these different layers and layers, and it starts to feel very burdensome and heavy, that the best thing you can do is to, you know, strip it all down to the bare bones of nature, to the five elements, and there's something very refreshing about doing that. You know, it's kind of like, you know, going outside and walking in nature as a reset. And I do think that we all need to do that from time to time. So it's not feeling like anybody has the right to tell you exactly how to practice. And that's not a call to not learn or to not pursue mentorship if that's what you want to do and if you're ready to do that. But it's this need to constantly be checking in with yourself and making sure that you're really being true to who you are and that your magical practice is authentic as possible.
The website is danieldulski.com. The book is The Holy Wild, the Heathen Bible for the Untamed Woman, from our guest, Danielle Dulski. Danielle, thanks for being on with us today and for all your insights. Come back again, do it for a third time. We'd enjoy that.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for having me, John.
We'll link to Danielle's website at achieveforyourself.com. Become a Chief for Yourself Genuine subscriber, and you'll get word on when the calls and interviews are done. Times and dates can and sometimes do change. If you want the heads up on who's going to be on and when, subscribe by putting your email address into the box at the top of the page, achieveforyourself.com, and you'll get the information sent to you. Of course, your information stays right here and will not be sold or given to anyone. So we'll finish up here. Thanks for being with us today and for all your likes and follows too. Always appreciated. Be well, and I'll talk to you soon.